Thanks to Indeed for sponsoring the Apple Bits XL. Indeed knows hiring needs to be cost-effective when you're running your own business. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/AppleBits. Terms and conditions apply. And thanks to MasterClass for supporting the Apple Bits XL. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/AppleBits. Okay, we've got a killer show. The U.S. government and the Department of Justice file a lawsuit against Apple. Are they a monopoly? We'll talk about it with our special general counsel, plus an interview with Greg Joswiak on campus. You're going to hear it here, and we're also going to talk about it. So, yeah. We got a whole lot cooking for you, so you know what time it is. Let's get to the show! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. It's the Apple Bits XL. Brian Tong here, your host. Doing the most for everything good and bad inside the world of Apple. Woo! A lot happening this week. Apple's antitrust fight begins, right? There's the case against Apple as a monopoly from the Department of Justice in a sweeping antitrust complaint. We're going to talk about that first, but before we do that, let's get to some orders of business. This show is brought to you by you. Patreon.com/Brian Tong is how you support this show. It's how you support all my content. What does it start at? $2 per month? $5 per month? $10 per month, the $25 or the $100 platinum Apple level. You get early access to my content, rewards at different levels, and a completely ad-free version of the show. Right now, we have a Closure Rings challenge going out with a special employee Closure Rings hat as the rewards, and I say rewards by plural. We just recently did a Apple Vision Pro giveaway, so there's plenty going on there. Patreon.com/Brian Tong is how you do it. You know I love hearing from you also. If you want to be a part of the show, also record a voice memo, send it in to applebitsshow@gmail.com. That's applebits with a Z, your name, where you're from, what you want to talk about, and we will put you on the show because it just adds so much texture and flavor. I enjoy it, and I love hearing from you all. So applebitsshow@gmail.com. All right, so let's get into this. I told you we'd have a special guest, someone who's a little more expert in this field and offers a lot more context and color. So, can you guess who we might be having join the show? We're going to find out right now. All right. I told you we're going to have a special guest to guide us through some of this because we need to bring the experts in the house. So I'd like to introduce to you Apple Bits General Counsel, Gil Cabrera. G-Money!
What's up? I'm actually here for some expertise I have. This is amazing. Not just my purchasing skills.
You are amazing, Gil. First of all, I want to let people know listening that I literally texted Gil on very short notice and said, hey, can you jump in and talk about what's going on between the Department of Justice and Apple? And he was like, yeah, man. And so I really appreciate Gil, always really appreciate it.
Hey, man, you know me. I'll set aside whatever you need.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, the big headline here for this week, and we'll probably be hearing about this for quite honestly years. The U.S. sues Apple for a legal monopoly over smartphones, and the Department of Justice claims that Apple has maintained an illegal monopoly over the smartphone market by locking in customers and making experiences worse for rival products. And this is in an expansive new antitrust lawsuit that is seeking to really upend many of the ways that Apple is, let's call it, locking down the iPhones. But they've have a far-reaching, let's say, documentation that is focusing on a few things. I do kind of want to mention at least some of the key argument points or that they're making to and it is very overreaching, where it feels like they're not just saying you're doing one thing, it's a pattern of behavior that is leading consumers in a way that we don't like. And by when I say we, is the Department of Justice. So one of the aspects that they're focusing on is, guess what, those green bubbles. The green bubble lock-in. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Other examples are what they call super apps. Pretty much think of these apps. Gil's already.
I was cracking up at that because I'm like, who the hell calls these super apps other than the Department of Justice?
I literally was like, I had to read a little more to be like, wait, what is a super app? I'm not kidding.
No, me too. And I was like, wait, what app is a super app? You know, I was like, okay.
We'll try and explain what we think it is based on reading the limitation of cloud streaming apps, and we'll also talk about where Apple's already kind of tweaked how they're operating right now. Lack of compatibility with other competitors' smartwatches. I think this one is okay. Our hands are both up, but we will talk about that. And then some of the policies around the Apple Wallet, basically third parties not being able to have their own wallets or apps with tap to pay features that are independent of Apple Pay. I thought another complaint that has kind of been dug up, because those were the five that were focused on as of the 21st, which was yesterday. So, you know, a lot of stuff comes up. I don't know if you saw this one, though, Gil, but CarPlay has also been added to the complaint. And I'm just like, okay, hands up. So, to be honest, we're coming here from a perspective of, let's talk about what the Department of Justice is, aiming towards, maybe what they're trying to accomplish here. We're not saying we are Apple fanboys. We hate this. This is not the perspective we're taking at all. So, Gil, I kind of broke down a few things, but I'd kind of like to get your overall thoughts on, you know, what you've seen and read, and your overall thoughts on this.
I mean, take a step back, because the sort of basis of all of this is that they are a monopoly in the smartphone market to begin with. And my issue there has always been that there's good competition out there. I mean, you have, at the very least, you have two giants competing against each other, and that, you know, negates a monopoly in my book. You know, you have two different universes, and that's the reality of it right now, primarily between Apple and Google. And although Apple has, I think, something like 65% of the U.S. market, that's not a monopoly, you know, and people can move back and forth, and Google has tools set up to help you, transition your stuff. So I take issue with whether or not they're a monopoly. And, you know, at some level, they've been slapped with this before, with the Epic Games lawsuit, and the government has kind of lost that primary point. So it's just one of those things where I have a problem with the premise of it kind of walking into it, because the ecosystem is strong and the pulls of it are very, very strong. But you could say the same thing about Google. I mean, you could say the same thing about their ecosystem too. If you buy a bunch of their stuff, if you're buying their apps and everything else, you're not going to want to move out of that system either. And so I just don't buy the premise to begin with. That's my overall take on it. The other thing that's interesting is this is most antitrust lawyers that I've been kind of reading, and just based on my few cases I've handled in my youth, it's the last time I've done an antitrust case. But it's a different take, right? Because a lot of this is dealing with business relationships and business to business relationships, right? It's not really it's the consumers are being harmed because Apple is requiring their business partners to agree to certain things or not agree to certain things. It is unusual traditionally in antitrust law for the courts and the government to step in the middle of business to business relationships. And so that's a different take than we've had before. So it's kind of an interesting, it's innovative for the government, and that usually is not a good thing when it comes to filing a lawsuit. So that'll be an interesting thing to see how that plays.
Yeah, you know, when I'm reading through some of these things, and you know, some of the 5 points that are, at least let's call them focal points of what they're claiming to is building this behavior, because if we go back to the Epic versus Apple lawsuit, Epic's main focus was that Apple was not being fair in how they ran their app store. And that was more of the focus of it, whether it was related to royalties. Of course, Apple did create the App Store, right? Kind of created this marketplace. And I do personally feel that Apple should lower some of its royalty fees. I think 30% is way too high now. And so that's where I stand with that. But still, Epic was making a case like it prevented them from being able to sell, their extra skins because Apple is taking a large chunk of that. Now, the result of that is Epic didn't necessarily win the case, but it did force Apple to say, okay, you need to offer a third party way for people to go about, paying for items. It cannot be just under exclusively the App Store. So that was I don't want to say a concession, but at least it was, they got slapped on the wrist with that one. All right.
Right. So, yeah, and that's the right frame. It's slapped on the wrist. But again, within the context of that, it was like they're not a monopoly here.
Correct.
It's an unfair business practice, which is different. but you're not a monopoly. These assume it's a monopoly, and that's the interesting thing that the government has to overcome. And I think, you know, the App Store, the pricing, the royalty aspect of the App Store is probably their biggest Achilles heel, because it no longer has any relationship to their cost structure. It's just kind of price gouging at this point, right? And that's probably their Achilles heel, you know, sort of across the world. Other governments are just regulating it away slowly. The U.S. government really can't, so they're trying to deal with it from the existing laws. Some of this stuff makes me laugh. Like, I mean, the mobile cloud streaming services stuff, which is really tied to like, it has that sort of gaming kind of thing. Like, you can't move from game to game, and I'm like, you know, is the iPhone really that much of a gaming platform that people are holding back? People are staying with the Apple to keep gaming on it. Like, I just, that one just seemed weird to me.
So we'll talk about each of these, but let's, since we're starting on this cloud streaming, right? Okay. So just recently Apple announced that they were going to be opening up their App Store to cloud streaming platforms like Xbox. Okay. So this hasn't happened before, but in the complaint, they're basically saying, oh, because they're not allowing cloud streaming, that it forces people to not, I guess the wording was something along the lines of like not getting more expensive hardware for, or what was it? I'm sorry. I'm like,
well, they have to pay for Apple's more expensive hardware is what they're saying.
Thank you. Thank
to be able to be able to do it. Yeah. So, it's, yeah. So you're just like, okay, who the hell? I mean, that's just
hands
on up. On an iPhone, it's like, what? you don't buy the iPhone to play the games. I don't anyway. I don't think most people do. But that's
the other one that obviously I think you and I will talk about this. So we'll go through them. But the smartwatch one, I'm really actually more puzzled. It's almost like they don't understand necessarily what's happening now. Okay, if they're saying that Apple makes a smartwatch, it's not compatible on other OSs. Guess what? On the flip side, sure, they don't have the same market share, at least here in the U.S. And again, when you mentioned that global market share in the U.S., global versus U.S. market share, Apple's around 65-70 in U.S. Globally, they're like 25-30. It's not anything where they're dominating that space, okay? So if we talk about, let's talk about smartwatches. Google and Samsung have not developed any type of app to run their devices on Apple. Now, they haven't also said in here that Apple was explicitly blocking them from developing a smartwatch app here. There was no API hook that was telling them, no, we're going to make it difficult for you. They didn't do it. And Apple did not develop on Android also, because there have been recent reports that came up that they stopped development because of security issues. And I actually, you know, I buy into that. I don't think that's a made up excuse at all. And so, okay, then now let's come down to the actual hardware. Let's be honest. What is and this is not biased, what is the best smartwatch today? It's the Apple Watch. They made the best smartwatch. I've used the Pixel Watch, and the Pixel Watch is solid. It is not an Apple Watch. Even something as simple as the Pixel Watch 2, they have a partnership with Fitbit for their fitness. You have to pay a subscription to kind of unlock these additional algorithms and features for their Fitbit platform. I'm not going to do that. Apple has the closure ring system. Right, we have other third-party apps that are hooked into it, but the smartwatch thing kind of boggles my mind a little bit as one of these 5 points.
And the way they frame it is weird too, because it's almost the reverse too. Because they say that consumers are facing substantial out-of-pocket costs if they do not keep buying iPhones. So it's consumers that have bought an Apple Watch will spend more if they don't keep buying iPhones. It's like, so what you're saying is somebody that's bought an Apple Watch won't buy an Android to use with their Apple Watch? Like, it makes no sense at all in terms of just how this stuff works. And like, what are you talking? And the other thing that's interesting is you don't need depending on what type of Apple Watch you get, but if you get an Apple Watch with cellular, you don't need a smartphone along with it. So it's like, what are you talking about? Yeah, it's bizarre. And I just don't, that framing was bizarre to me because it almost felt reversed. Like I thought they were, when I originally read it, I thought what they were saying was, if you have an iPhone, you can't buy a Google watch and connect it to it. But that's not even what they're saying. Like that would make a little sense, sort of. But they're saying, no, no, God, you bought Apple's watch, and now you have to stick with Apple's iPhone. It's like, what?
It's and also, let's be clear, okay, the Apple Watch market penetration, although it is the smart, it's like around 20-25% for users of Apple Watch. So this is not a device that everyone has. We know this. So again, yeah. And I thought, to your point, the framing, similar to the cloud streaming and the Apple Watch, the idea of saying you're forcing people to buy a more expensive phone. Okay, we're you know, if you saw our video, there's a lot of shrugs and hands up in the air.
Those are particularly weird because it's like, do you understand how this marketplace works and how consumers sort of think in these terms? And they just don't seem to. The other three, then, and we'll go through one by one, I think. But the other three are more app based issues that you know, at least there's an interesting discussion to be had there. But mobile computing and the watch stuff is just goofy, and I don't understand that at all.
They seem pretty weak and floppy when you look at these five. You're just like, what? Why are these here? Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Cross-platform messaging apps. So I don't actually think they exclude cross-platform messaging apps. I think they tighten up their own messaging app so it doesn't play well with SMS. But like, I have Signal on my phone, I've got WhatsApp on my phone, and they all work the same. And in fact, Signal was the original use for Signal that we used was because I had a group of three friends, and one of them had a damn Android, and they're right there. The SMS doesn't work right. When you have two Apple users and an Android user, it can be hinky in a thread. So we got Signal so that we could have a thread. So that is a cross-platform messaging app that works great.
The interesting thing is there are solutions, but I think if there's anything that leads the most to like locking out people from, you know, Apple built this, the word ecosystem really didn't exist in tech until Apple did it. Okay. And that's
nor did App Store, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Nor did App Store. And so again, this is not defending, but there is some credit to build that, because guess what? Every company right now is building their own ecosystem. Google has their own ecosystem that, you know, some people are hooked into, but not as many people have bought in the US specifically Android phones. I think that out of all these complaints or these specific like kind of key points, the green bubble one is probably, in my opinion, the strongest one, because it definitely, look, we know, and Apple has kind of been a little cocky about it, a little cavalier about it as well. So, you know, that hasn't helped them historically. There was a conference where I believe like a guest asked Tim Cook along the lines of like, I can't, you know, my mom and I can't communicate with, you know, in the same way over text message. And he outright said, get your mom an iPhone. So, you know, that's going to be a signature phrase that is going to be used in this case, I'm sure. And that's funny, actually. That's just people that know, it's honestly, if you're not taking this, it's funny. But, you know, the green bubbles has definitely, I know a friend who ended up having to convert over to iPhone to be part of the group chat in the proper way so that it didn't bother everybody. And we know that Apple said, hey, we're going to adopt RCS. Well, guess what? They're still going to keep iMessage. RCS will have some more features, but now we're kind of past the point where them bringing in RCS compatibility will even make a difference. I think this psychological aspect of, believe it or not, green bubbles and blue bubbles is already there now. You can't really go back on that. To me, look, this is one situation where I definitely think they'll get some sort of a slap on the wrist for, but all Apple has to do to respond to some of these things is literally give RCS as much as, like, if you can, 99% of the features that iMessage has. And guess what? It's probably not going to change the smartphone market share that much. Maybe it changes by 1-2%. I don't know, but
I had a question about that. So the comment in particular was, that he said, buy your mom an iPhone, was about sending videos from an
app. Was the quality of it?
He said he couldn't send his mother videos because of Apple's messaging quirks Android phones. So that's the way it's phrased in one of the things I saw. And so my question is, my recollection is that when I said the few friends I have that have Androids, if I send them a video, sometimes it's too big, right? Or something happens where like it won't transmit it. Some videos go fine. So I assume it's a size issue, and the iPhone, iMessage doesn't make that restriction, comparatively speaking. But I'm not sure if that's the case. I think that is, and I don't know if RCS fixes that or not.
Well, see, I don't know if that RCS technically fixes that or not. I think part of it was, you know, an older system in Apple's file type. It wasn't like they were trying to make it as compatible as possible. I've seen plenty of times where I've sent a video file and it looked really grainy and crappy when sent via SMS, you know, so that might be a system thing, but I don't know if RCS is going to necessarily 100% resolve that or not. You know, you get end-to-end encryption. I guess, you know, they'll want to interact with all the proper emojis, but look, if Signal and WhatsApp were dominating and we use those, if people chose to use those as their primary apps, and they quite honestly could, they really could. Absolutely. And they were taking over this whole claim about the whole green bubble thing would be null, but it's just not. So there is the part of it that also kind of is not frustrating, but it's confuses. There is consumer choice, and it's not like consumers don't know that these things are available. Yeah. So, and part of it is just making a damn good product. Like,
well, and again, I think this is the other one where the phrasing is weird in the complaint, because I get the iMessage attack. That's not the way it's framed, right? It's framed as a cross-platform messaging app, which is, I think, different. And so it's a weird framing for it, because again, I think the cross-platform messaging apps actually do work well. It's that iPhone and an SMS and a regular messaging app don't. And maybe they're following Google's messaging the cross-platform app, but that doesn't make any sense. So again, this is another one where the sort of framing is weird. The other one is
the Apple Wallet, the tap to pay stuff.
Yeah, that I've never even thought to look at other tap to pay stuff. Too. So I assume that's right, right? That you can't use the near field stuff for somebody else's app.
This is funny you say that, right? So I didn't even, I never even cared to look for any third party wallet app, quite honestly.
Right.
I've never, and again, we've never seen a third party wallet app try to rise against Apple. If they're saying, again, okay, fine, there are no third party wallet apps and Apple prevents you from doing any type of, let's say, third party tap to pay feature. I mean,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, are they saying that we can't have that you can't have Google, whatever the hell Google's wallet's called? What's it called?
It's Google Pay.
It was so bad. Can you not have Google Pay on your smartwatch? Okay, but I wouldn't want to go. And by the way, I assume Google doesn't let you have Apple Pay on their wallet, on their stuff. So it's sort of a weird dynamic. This is the bleed over into the super app stuff, because I know that in Asia, you use WeChat for some of your tap to pay stuff, right?
Right,
and correct, so I assume this suggests that you cannot use WeChat in the States on an iPhone anyway to tap to pay.
That's a good point. I mean, again, if our consumer behavior in the US was to want to use that app, and we were complaining, like, I haven't heard anyone complain, I can't use WeChat Pay, because you literally overseas, you use it as your wallet now. For a little while, I think as far as back maybe a year and a half ago, you, for whatever reason, you weren't able to do it if you had a US bank account, but then they recently changed that. So I have relatives that said, oh, now you just use it just like your regular wallet within the messaging app. But yeah, that's a behavior that hasn't even existed in it, right? We don't, for example, iMessage doesn't dominate. Yeah, they were ahead of us.
They were ahead of us on with WeChat as a mobile pay and messaging. I mean, this is an interesting thing that I think happens in other, especially Asia. I'm not even sure it happens really in Europe, because when I was in Korea, they had their own kind of WeChat app, and it's their Google. It's what they sort of, and I've already forgotten what the hell the thing is, but they use it for everything. It's Google. It's Amazon. It's Uber. It's payments. and messaging. It's all those things. And it was one app. Now, it was one company. When I tried to get it for the Uber stuff, because Uber didn't work well over there, it was multiple apps, one company, but they had like multiple apps. They were all kind of, it was actually a pain in the ass, because trying to get one of them, you had to get their pay thing to be able to access. You know, I ultimately just started deleting them all because it just didn't work. But they had downloaded like five apps to try to get me to be able to use their Uber. And it just didn't work. So I think that's just a different cultural issue, because they sort of had it before our phones even did it. And so I think that's like, I'm not sure there's a super app in the States that consumers even want. And, you know, and maybe the DOJ is like, well, they wouldn't even know they want it, because Apple doesn't let them show up. And it's like, okay, but Android could have
the super apps there. Yeah. Right.
There's no restrictions on Android, right? And you don't see WeChat dominating in the Android world, which is, I assume, something that Apple will point out is that, you know, Google has a wide open app store.
So,
and you don't see them having super apps.
Okay. So Gil, I interrupted you. I thought you were done because of the lag. No. Okay. Here's a funny thing. Okay. I'm going to read actually a quote directly from the lawsuit, specifically to CarPlay, because I think this is where they get the language right, but they actually completely misunderstand CarPlay. Okay. Yeah. So like this, here's what it actually says. And I quote, "By applying the same playbook of restrictions to CarPlay, Apple further locks in the power of the iPhone by preventing the development of other disintermediating technologies that interoperate with the phone but reside off device." So what they're basically saying is like Apple's CarPlay feature essentially kind of like takes over your car, prevents you from doing anything else. And we know car systems exist without CarPlay, without Android Auto. They are fine. They were alluding about like, you know, your AC, your gauges. It's almost like they watched the WWDC demo of CarPlay and said, holy crap, they're taking over the entire car with their phone.
Yeah.
That's not how car systems work.
No, it's so weird. Yeah.
So like, I actually, when I read this, I'm like, oh, at least their language of like, yeah, applying their playbook of restrictions, taking over, you know, and dominating this. Okay, you got the right language, but it does not apply. This does not make sense with CarPlay.
Well, and the best part is this is the one that made me laugh on that paragraph is Apple leverages its iPhone user base to exert more power over its trading partners, including American car makers, in future innovation. And it's like, Apple ain't got no leverage over car companies. Like, that is insane.
In fact, Android Auto. Android Auto is the de facto prevalent car platform. 100%. 100%.
You think Apple goes in there is like, all right, Ford, you need to hey, GM, here's what you need to do with your car. And it's like, come on, man. They're lucky that GM lets them plug in is really the issue more than anything else. I mean, that one was a bizarro thing that I remember when I saw that, I was like, what the, you know, that's just, it's just okay. Silly.
I do want to tell you, let me pull this up because, when we talk about what's silly, I need to go back real quick and find this because there's a funny thing where there's a from the actual lawsuit. And let me pull this. I just found it. Okay. So I want to tell you how silly this sounds, but the DOJ, let me just read this. Okay. This is in regards to why Apple maybe harmed or prevented other companies from phone success. Okay. Not sure if you've seen this, but this is funny. In the document, many prominent, well-financed companies have tried and failed to successfully enter the relevant markets because of these entry barriers. Past failures include Amazon, which released its Fire mobile phone in 2014, but could not profitably sustain its business and exited the following year. Microsoft, which discontinued its mobile business in 2017, and HTC, which also exited. Who was buying the Amazon Fire Phone?
It was just like, come on. Yes. And actually, the funny thing is, if you recall, Microsoft had a decent product. There was no uptake on it.
And they were too late. They were too late to the game.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, I think the thing that they're very upset about is that Apple has you know, in economics, the first mover advantage, right? Because they invented the space. But the reality is, freaking Google came out of nowhere and was able to sort of plug in and do all this stuff pretty early. And Samsung even more so, right? I mean, Samsung sort of was there with Android, but I mean, now they're dominant in so many spaces. I just it's just a bizarro view of this marketplace, and that's what I don't understand. And I don't understand the motivation for it, other than you've had some, mostly I would say, app developers and app folks complaining about it. And that has gotten the attention of people, of the regulators, right? And that's really what's driving it. And again, that all comes back to, you know, they're making us charge all this money, and they're charging us all this money if we want to do stuff. And, there's still some, I mean, I know there's a bunch of apps like this, but there's still a bunch of apps where I think it's the Kindle app, right? You still can't buy a book on the Kindle app. Because Amazon doesn't want to pay the royalty.
That's right. That was my issue with comic books. This is one example. My comics book app shut down because comic books are like $4 or $5, and Apple was wanting like 30% of this. And they're like, we're not making anything off this. You know, I think to your point, the developers, like they're the ones that I hope I see the most change from all this. Maybe it gets Apple to a little like, okay, come to Jesus moment. We'll make good and like kind of, we'll work towards helping you all feel like loved, because without the app developers, my brain's going in a lot of places, but without the app developers, right, the app store is nothing. And quite honestly, we've kind of seen a little bit of retaliation, I feel like, with the Apple Vision Pro from the app developers that maybe would have jumped on board, but because Apple's app store policies and maybe how their relationship with developers has been, they're not as willing to be like, we're going full in. I don't know if I'm making this up in my mind, but I'm feeling it a little bit of maybe, you know, over the history of time, that they're like, you want a new platform? Do you want to treat us better or not? Right.
Interesting. So
this is kind of a moment for them to potentially at least get something back from all this. But, you know, when you talk about go ahead.
I just, you know, with the developers piece, I agree with you. I think they should, especially now, but at some point they needed to shift from, we invented this space, you know, that didn't exist, to a bit more of an accommodating tone. They've sort of done that, right? With smaller developers, they've tinkered around the edges of it. I also can't help but sort of point out that, like, the number of jobs that the App Store created out of whole cloth. I mean, none of these things. There's so many jobs and economic impact that the App Store created out of nowhere. I mean,
multi-billion dollars, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, right? And so, I think they had a lot of goodwill there, and I think unfortunately that because they haven't sort of shifted on it, they're probably starting to lose it. There are still a ton of developers making a ton of cash. Mm-hmm. You know, with the iPhone, they just are. And from a consumer standpoint, I like that Apple is, that it's a closed space, right? That I like that they look at stuff. Still doesn't protect you from everything, but it's at least not the full wild west of some of like an Android app store, right? That you have no idea what's
and
in there.
Anything.
No else. Idea. Yeah.
And again, that's what you're talking to you and saying right now is, consumer choice, like literally, that is there
exactly
is
right.
There is still consumer choice. You know, part of this, I don't, you know, again, you and I are just throwing ideas on the wall about this. When you talk about this bizarre world, part of me feels like a little bit of this might be because, you know, the government has asked Apple to give them access to phone data and stuff. And I think there's some real tension and beef behind the scenes of Apple not agreeing to the government's demands. And this is, in a way for the government to stick it back to Apple, because the reasonings here just don't make sense, but they are still part of this. And in a bizarre world, in a twisted world where someone who doesn't necessarily understand tech but feels this way and can argue it properly in court that it does actually exist in some way, I just feel like there's something beyond what we're seeing here that is a part of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's sort of in the government's, the sort of police power side of the government to crack open the App Store, right? You know, if Apple has the total lockdown on the App Store and has a business philosophy and really marketing philosophy and everything else that privacy is important, and they're not going to get in the middle of their users' privacy, even if the government tries to compel them to, you know, maybe the government says, hey, we need to get in there some other way, and maybe it's sticking some apps in through the iPhone that crack it open in different ways, right? I mean, it's kind of an interesting theory there, and it that might be a motivator at some level,
right? Right. It's like underneath all this.
I think it's mostly just it's kind of like when you have a congressional hearing on tech, and you're like, oh my god, none of these people know how any of this stuff works. That's how it kind of feels like, really. It's funny. I used to have a good friend who's now retired, but back in the day, he was a U.S. attorney that did a lot of the cyber stuff, and he was on top of it in terms of the tech and everything else. This one reads like it's like, oh man, like, you know, I don't understand how it is you guys think this works, and how does you think this makes sense on so many fronts? Again, I think the App Store stuff is where you have the best, you know, arguments to make. Some of this stuff is just crazy. and the funny thing is that, you know, this is going to be a war, man.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this is going to be 4 or 5 years. It's going to go up all the way, probably to the Supreme Court eventually, depending on how it goes. Because the courts are going to have to decide, you know, is this what the law really says, particularly when you're shoehorning yourself in between two business relationships.
And I mean, in the past, when you know, let's talk about, you know, let's briefly touch on Microsoft. I mean, this was at a time back in the 90s. This is like, you know, acquisitions of companies that make you this large behemoth. This is not an acquisition. I don't know if that matters or not, but this is a company that has stayed the same company this whole time. It's not like they bought if they acquired the Android market for some reason.
And shut it down.
Okay, yeah, there's something there, right? But
well, or I could see them stopping them from acquiring the marketplace, right? Like more to the point. But I agree. I mean, yeah, Apple's growth has been organic. I mean, it's a crack up when you think about it, right? If you think about the last 30 years, and the government saying that Apple's a monopoly when you look at where they were in 2006, right? 2005 didn't exist in this space. They created an entire product category, and then now it's like, oh well, you're too powerful because you've managed to convince 65% of the users to use your platform. It's like, you know, and again, the interoperability, the closed neck, everything about it, it is a feature, not a bug, and it's what consumers want. I mean, I think that's why most consumers go to Apple. They don't go because, I mean, they're paying more. We know we're paying more. And we're paying more for a reason. Like there was a quote about, you know, you could, this stops people from going to go buy a $50 Android phone. Like, no, it doesn't. people can choose to go buy a $50 Android phone and have their whole marketplace and their whole ecosystem inside of that. Google gives you every single one of those things.
Apple, you can buy a $199 iPhone if you really want to.
Yeah. Yeah,
if you want,
people don't do that either.
Exactly.
So my hot take on it is, I think it's going to be I think it's an uphill battle for the government on most of these things. Not the least of which is because I think it's a novel theory on antitrust, based on what I've known over the years.
Yeah, like to your point, this is most likely going to be a slugfest. Apple is not going to roll over on this. This will be years, and we'll see where it ends up. I mean, hopefully we'll still be doing this by the time it wraps up, because I think the Microsoft case, what, took 3 years, and then there were like 4 years of appeals from what I read. So that's when we say a slugfest, this is not a 2-3 year. We're talking about maybe 5 to 10 year thing, right?
No, these are decade long battles, unfortunately, because not only do you have appeals at the end, you'll have appeals in the middle. You know, they have to go all the way up, and that's like a 3-year exercise, and it comes all the way back down, and then it goes through again. I mean, it's these things will take forever, and Apple's going to throw everything they have at it. And remember, there's been points in time in the recent past where Apple's had more cash on hand than the U.S. government.
They don't call him G Money for nothing. That's why he knows these things.
just some funny times in our recent history where the treasury was down to a few billion.
Oh my gosh. So we'll keep our eyes on this. All right, we will be back with the talk with me and Gil, but let's take a breather right now to thank the sponsor of the podcast, Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agreed Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And something that I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy with Indeed's hiring platform. Candidates you invite to apply are 3 times more likely to apply to your job than candidates who only see it in search, according to US Indeed data. We get you 1 step closer to hire by immediately matching with your quality candidates, and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/AppleBits. Just go to Indeed.com/AppleBits right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/AppleBits. Terms and conditions apply. Need a hire? You need Indeed. And let's also take a moment to talk about another sponsor of this podcast, Masterclass. Now, you know, I'm a content creator and I'm doing literally everything on my own. You know, getting better every day is always something I'm trying to do in ways both big and small. And James Clear's Masterclass on building better habits has helped me change my approach and just make some small changes to be more efficient. Now, with Masterclass, you don't need to wonder if you're getting the best class. You can be confident in what you're learning. Now, this year, learn from the best to become your best anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. We're working with Masterclass and we have a deal for you here. Right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/applebits. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors, so whether you want to master negotiation with Chris Voss, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or learn these small habits that make a big impact on your life with James Clear, Masterclass has you covered. Masterclass helps you learn anywhere, on TV, in the app, on their website, even in audio mode on the go. So how much would it cost for you to take one-on-one classes from the world's best? Well, that's easily hundreds of dollars. And with a Masterclass annual membership, it's just $10 a month. So don't just talk about improving. Masterclass helps you actually do it. Now, with Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, like The Science of Better Sleep with Matthew Walker. That helped me prioritize and find better ways to actually fall asleep and then renew myself for the next day, even when, you know, I'm traveling and I am grinding. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/applebits. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/applebits. masterclass.com/applebits. There's some other stuff that actually happened this week, and I'm actually curious about your thoughts on, if people haven't seen, I put up this 40-minute epic video where I got a chance to talk to some of the Apple reps and execs behind the scenes. And you know, right now I'm just going to quickly jump in here because I want to give some context. I wasn't going to play some of the interviews, but let's just play. It's kind of an important person in the Apple sphere, Senior Vice President of Worldwide Marketing Greg Joswiak, aka known as Jaws, aka known as the guy who's always presenting on almost every Apple keynote and always is presenting when it comes down to iPhone. I got to sit down and talk to him in a ride around Apple Park. So here is that segment, and then we're going to come back to Gil and I talking about that and more. So, Jaws, what do you think about this setup we have here?
I love it.
Seen anything like it before?
You know what? I love to see everything videoed with iPhone.
Right.
It's absolutely incredible. So I love your rig. Perfect for riding around Apple Park. And I got to get me one of these.
Told them they need to keep this the way it is, right? Because you know what's fun about this? Nothing has been done like this, like on campus.
That's cool.
Right?
Well, you're original, Brian.
I guess. We're trying to be original here.
Yeah, no, I love that.
You know, we're talking about, obviously here, talking about a lot of different things with the iPhone. And I'm just curious, you've seen the iPhone evolution, you know, basically from inception. And is there something, I know it's a lot to think about in the moment, but is there a moment for you that really sticks out as like, man, during all these years, what has maybe surprised you or, you know, really enjoyed with just the iPhone over all these years?
Well, you know, I've been here 38 years, so I got a lot of memories,
a lot of history,
and I've been here with iPhone since the very beginning, yeah. And I have so many great memories, and we're still making them.
Yep,
is the cool part. I will tell you that I think one that sticks out maybe more than others is it's got to be the launch of the original iPhone, because it was first of all, picture the time, right? It was June of 2007, and you know, we had introduced it to some pretty nice reaction in January. You remember Steve with the whole three devices, and we didn't really say a whole lot until June, and we started kind of telling people, remind people it was coming, and we decided that for the day it was going to be available, it was going to be available at 6 p.m. on Friday of that week. It was at the 25th, anyway, and so we were going to, you know, some people were going to New York, some people going to Chicago. I was down in L.A. I was at the Grove. And remember, it's a 6 p.m. launch. So get there the night before, and we woke up pretty early in the morning to reports that there were people trying to line up there all night. And at first, the Grove's sending them home because it was private property. They didn't let people line up here. Yeah, what are you trying to do?
What are you guys doing here?
You know, and so apparently people kept coming. Shushamoy kept coming. They finally gave up. They said, all right, we'll just let people line up. So we're like, we got to go see this, right? So we arrive. It was somewhere around dawn, and there's this huge line. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, this isn't like now we do 8 a.m. launches. Yeah. This was 6 p.m., and here it was. People were lined up, and I was just blown away by that. And what was really cool is, you know, these were normal-looking people, right? It wasn't like they were in their Star Trek outfits, and nothing against that. Hey, I've probably worn one from time to time.
Trekkies, don't be triggered here.
No. I don't mean it as an insult, but I'm talking about this was the population, right? This is people who wanted to be part of this celebration, this moment in history. But what's really cool about that, Brian, that I love about when I think back to that, it was the start of a tradition, right? Yeah. You see, outside of the pandemic, every iPhone launch we have, people want to do that again. Yeah. You know, we make it a little easier with that 8 a.m. you know, start, but people line up. They're here for that celebration. They're here for being that moment. It's a community. And that all started, you know, for us back in the original iPhone in 2007. So, you know, it still gives me goosebumps when I think about it. I went working the line, talking to people. You know, they were just excited to be there.
You know, I was at the Palo Alto store on that launch day too.
Yeah.
And the energy was there. You know, Palo Alto was like the SJ store back then. And
I believe he went there that day.
Yeah, there was so much energy. And, you know, that's definitely true. I mean, not only is it the first iPhone, but just the magical moment. Like, it led to so many other things.
Yeah.
You know,
including that yearly tradition, which
absolutely.
I love.
Absolutely. You know, we're here, 17 years now later. We're at iPhone 15. And, you know, I'm going to ask you this because we've seen the narrative and we see people talk. People tell me like, oh, the iPhone has plateaued and you're here delivering the new iPhone every year. What's your response to that kind of that chatter?
You know, every time I even think that the iPhone is as perfect as it can be, right? What else can we do to make it better? Our amazing team figures out a way to show how we can make it not just a little bit better, they can make it a lot better. Mm-hmm. And you know, I look at the iPhone 15 generation and let's take the camera, right? So the camera on the iPhone 15 Pro is not just, you know, it's so much better than the iPhone 14 Pro camera, and it's miles beyond what we were doing, you know, a few years ago. I know you're looking at iPhone 11s.
Yep.
You know, that was 5 years ago, and it's just miles beyond that. And it's so important because people capture all the moments of their daily lives, right? It's what's changed all of us, right? Yep. One of the things, you know, with that, and it's not just social media. No, social media is a huge part of it. And so the camera is so important, and just the ability to take, you know, now up to 48 megapixel, you know, we have 3x zoom on the iPhone 15 Pro. We have 5x zoom on the iPhone 15 Pro Max. We use computational photography that just makes these spectacular pictures, which are the pictures you're going to keep the rest of your life. It's important they're good, right? And but when I really get excited is when I look at the video story.
Yeah. You know me and video.
I know. And if people and look at this, right? It's because, look, we're so proud of what we're doing with video on iPhone that the reality is we don't look at other smartphones as the competition. We look at professional video cameras as really the benchmark that we're up against, right? How do we create cameras as good as that? And I feel we did that with the 15 Pro and 15 Pro Max. The video is absolutely spectacular. Of course, it's so good, as you know. First of all, you know how important our keynote events are to us.
Absolutely.
We shot, as you're well aware, the Mac keynote. Yep. Or scary fast, right, in this last fall, entirely on the iPhone. And if we used the 15 Pro Max.
I was in that room when they were showing it. There was a gasp. And people were like, you know, when you're in a room watching keynotes together and you can get that visceral reaction, that's when you're like, you know, it hit a chord. Because you might be thinking it, but when 30 or 40 other people are also thinking like, what? And then, you know, you got to sprinkle that in.
And it wasn't just pieces of it, right? It was the whole thing was shot that way.
Yeah.
And again, how do we do that? Well, it starts, of course, with great, you know, image quality, you know, the camera system itself, the lenses. But, you know, our secret sauce, you know, especially in video, has been our Apple Silicon. In fact, we do our own image signal processors, and the A17 Pro is spectacular. And it allows us to process all the video in real time, you know, in a way that our competitors just can't do. And so that gives us spectacular, you know, computational photography. It gives us incredible image stabilization. It gives us incredible, you know, cinematic effects. Even if you're in a bumpy ride, you know, we can use action mode to keep things stable. So it's just this incredible stuff that all happens in real time. You know, that the Apple Silicon enables us to do, and our own signal processors allow us to do. So it's spectacular. And then what we did with the 15 Pro is, of course, we gave it some incredible additional features. You know, we gave it the ability to, you know, not just record in ProRes, but you can record in Apple Log.
Yeah.
And and we were the first device to support ACES, you know, the Academy for
the standard.
Color encoding standard. And that allows us to do an incredible amount of stuff in post-production as well. That's why when we were able to do our test, hey, can we do the iPhone here instead of Pro Camera, the team was interleaving iPhone, you know, 15 Pro footage with professional cameras. And you couldn't tell where one stopped and the other led. And so we said, this is it. We're going to do this. And we were just blown away by how well it turned out. But, you know, video is even more exciting than that. Now you got me going.
Let me tell you something, right? Piggyback on your point about video. The creators, for the longest time, were always touting, get this camera. You got to get the best DSLR camera. You know, when we go to these events... Yeah. Guess what? People are using their iPhones for these events now. It's easier, it's faster, and the audiences they care about the content and they care about the images more than good enough. But people are using iPhones now at all these events, and that big chunky DSLR, that can do great things. I thought the interesting thing that you pointed out was that you're not trying to compete against other phone manufacturers' camera. You're looking at pro cameras. I've actually never heard you say something like that, but it definitely taps into now you think of that. You know, I always like to try and learn how you are thinking as a company. That definitely speaks true to what you've done with the camera. Like, you're like, no, we want a pro camera on a pro level. We're not even paying attention to what the other people are doing from that respect.
Well, and you nailed it, because look at this. I mean, you've got one, two, three iPhones in there. You wouldn't have three large rigs, you know, in here. And one of the things that, you know, professionals like yourself, creators, as well as professional filmmakers tell us that they love about the iPhone as a camera is it's way more intimate.
It is.
If we hit three giant rigs at us, you know, it feel different.
It's intimidating. To some
it's
people.
Intimidating, it is, right? It is. And it puts a barrier between the creator or the filmmaker and who they're videoing, mm-hmm. right? It's this unnatural barrier that doesn't exist yeah. with an iPhone. I've had filmmakers tell me that they can go into public areas like a market, and if they were going in there with a giant rig. It would look unnatural, right? Because everybody would go, well, what's going on? But they walk through there with their iPhone, right? Taking just the same quality of video they would have with their professional rig, and it keeps it natural, yeah, right? Yeah. The whole thing works, and that's important to us. You know, we serve that audience. But also, I can tell you, I'm excited about spatial video.
Yeah.
You've worn the Vision Pro. I don't know how many people in your audience who have done it, but you see a spatial memory, a spatial video, and you'll never forget it. It
changes your brain. It really does.
It changes your brain, and it makes you feel like you're reliving the memory in a way that you're actually there.
I try to explain that to people many times, and then once someone, of course, not everyone has gone out and gotten a Vision Pro yet, but the people that have, they're just like, okay, I get what you've been saying. Right. Yep. But, sometimes you need to experience these things.
Well, you do. But what I love about the fact that we've now given the ability for the 15 Pro and Pro Max to shoot spatial videos, even if you don't have a Vision Pro yet, and obviously most iPhone customers don't yet, you want to be able to capture your video this way, because someday you might, mm-hmm. right? And hopefully someday you will. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that I purposely shoot stuff now in my spatial video. I just go out of the way to say, I'm going to want this. And I want to preserve this memory in a way. And part of it is, look, I really wish I had this, to record it my parents.
Man.
Oh, right. That's right.
I literally got emotional one time after seeing a video and being like, that's when it really hit me.
It does.
Like how powerful it is. Like even I wish you guys had spatial video a year ago because that's when I got married.
Yeah.
I literally thought in my brain, I wish I had spatial video for this moment.
Yeah.
Because it isn't, it's that impactful. It's that powerful.
And for me, I've lost my parents. I would have loved to preserve them in this way. Mm-hmm. Or my kids when they were little, it's like, oh my God, I've gotten, nice video of them and photos, but there's that realness, right, to a spatial video that I wish I had it. And I think, that was really one of the things a bunch of us who are on the team working on it, that's all of us kept thinking, oh, I wish we had this, And of course, some of them are lucky enough to have it while they're doing this. They're like, oh, you're so lucky.
But this is a beautiful thing about technology. Like, a lot of times people have thought of technology as cold, very mechanical, circuits, boards. But this is technology now, when you get to technology, being able to capture and create moments that affect you emotionally, that's different.
Yeah.
And, yes, we have video, and it's not like we're jaded by video, but spatial video is a totally different beast. I'm really curious, we're going to see as it evolves, right? I mean, right now it's at 1080p. We saw cinematic video move from 1080p to 4K. Eventually, that's going to eventually most likely happen, but there's just so much more to untap. I know we're here talking iPhone. I'm not asking you to, drop any secrets, although, maybe if I twist you, get a little nerf or something, it might work. But how do you,
We'll have to do the beer ride for that one.
Hey, I'm okay with that. But how do you see, we talk about all these things. What excites you about the iPhone moving forward and, what excites you about
Look, we look at it, we're so lucky that we know that, the iPhone is... It's changed all of our daily lives, right? It's you wouldn't leave home without it, right? You'd go back, no matter how far you drove away, you'd go back and get it. You probably wouldn't get that far away. And so we look at that as such a responsibility. We talk about the camera and documenting your daily lives. One of the big areas that is an area that investment for us is keeping our users safe. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that we have a phone that can literally talk to satellites, and we have our SOS via satellite service because look, I love to hike. I'm sure you do. Sometimes you're off grid. Cellular towers only go so far into the wilderness, right? And you're going to be off the grid. Well, what happens if you get hurt? Well, we have a way now where you can get help. Or even if it's not maybe hurt, how often you've driven on an old country road and, worry about your car breaks down. Well, we have roadside assistance now. So again, we keep looking for what are the opportunities to positively impact people's lives. We've done that since the first iPhone. We keep doing that, and we've got the because of our hardware, software, services integration that we have here, we have this ability to, if we can imagine it, you know, more so than anybody else, we can create it. And that always gets me excited. It's got, you know, that's the Apple spirit, right? Is, okay, what kind of things can we help people with, you know? And let's go off and invent everything you need to do it. Like that SOS stuff, that was tough, man. You had to get your phones to talk to satellites. Well, that's just a piece of it. You know, we needed these relay centers. We needed places that, you know, could receive, you know, the communication and communicate it back to the 911 service so they can go do it. You know, there's a whole infrastructure that sets up. And that's why, you know, we had to take it, you know, one country at a time because you got to set up this stuff. But that's what Apple does. It's like, okay, it's hard. A lot of other places like, okay, we're not going to do it. Well, for us, we're like, okay, it's hard. That's our kind of stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. That gets us excited.
Okay, I got a last question for you. I know all these iPhones are like your children. Like, they're like your babies. This is a fun one. You know, you're like, I don't know where we're going. Okay, maybe I won't say pick your favorite, but if I had to say Jaws's top three iPhones, for whatever reason, they could be emotional, they could be something happened from a technology standpoint or design. What are Jaws's top three iPhones?
Gosh, well, the iPhone 15, the iPhone 15 Pro, and the iPhone 15
Pro
Max.
Okay, are you serious? Are we really doing that? Jaws, how could you do that? How could you do that to me?
Come on, look at this. What's not the love? Here's my picture of my wife and I, you know. I got the beauty of titanium.
So in recap, Jaws's top three iPhones, 15 Pro, and 15 Pro Max.
But you know what? I feel bad.
Okay.
I love the 15 Plus too. Okay, well, you know,
extend the list to four.
I feel like I have to extend it to four.
I shouldn't be surprised. But I know. Look, I know the first iPhone's on there somewhere.
It might be. But I'll tell you what. Go back and look at the original iPhone.
Okay.
It seems so small.
Oh, I have it. I own it. I own
You're
all
like,
my.
Really? Was it that small?
I own the, and it still works. It still works. With the 30 pin connector, whatever, I have my original iPhone and it is amazing.
And remember, everybody's like, it's got a massive 3.5-inch display.
Dude.
Because it changed everything, right? It was a first phone that did anything like that. And now you look at this, you know, massive, beautiful display.
Yeah.
And edge to edge, it's just pretty damn sweet, Brian.
Okay, so they told me that we're going to drop you off and me at the research and development lab now to just get a tour.
Yeah, we're going to show you all the secret stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds good to me.
They said, do you promise you wouldn't tell anybody?
I promise.
Okay.
I'll pinky swear with you.
All right, pinky swear.
All right,
awesome.
Thanks so much. This was great.
Thanks, Brian.
I appreciate it.
All right, so that was the interview. Let's get back to me and Gil talking about what happened.
I think the thing I kept saying to myself was like, man, do these people have like teleprompters in front of them? Because they were all smooth, right? Like they were all, even like the engineers, I mean, they could just talk to you off the cuff in Apple bullet points, which is pretty amazing. I thought, I thought the concept was cool. I think it was unique, the way it sort of happened and that sort of driving around the Apple campus and golf carts thing was a cool idea. And I'm glad they agreed to it. We didn't learn much. I mean, you know, we got a lot of their philosophy stuff. I thought that was cool. Jaws cracked me up when he gave you the three favorites were the 15, the 15 Pro.
I was like, come on.
Come on, bro. Like, it's gotta be I'll tell you what I was thinking. I was like, first one, the four.
Yep.
And then it's like maybe the 10, whenever they sort of change the size, those are the marquee ones, right? To say, oh, the most recent one that you should buy, it's like, come on, bro.
but he knew what he was doing.
God bless him. He's on message, that's for sure. But I appreciated you getting getting some feature requests in there. On the cameras.
Hey, I had to ask. I mean, whether they answered it or not, you know, I think the cool thing about this is that, you know, just to let people in on something, this was 3 to 4 months in the making. I remember when you had messaged me, I'm like, this took a long time. Like, you know, and you never know if it's going to happen or not, even who's going to show up and be a part of the interview. But I pitched the concept and I didn't think it was going to happen, but I pitched it and it happened.
Yeah, man, you got some good, I mean, the people that came on were like cool, like people that have been obviously featured in the keynotes and everything else. people that are, you know, actually decision makers inside of Apple. Yes. I mean, that was really cool. And it is fun to watch because it's like, you know, they have the product roadmap in front of them and they're holding it all back. I mean, that kind of stuff impresses the crap out of me personally. But I was thinking about one thing that I thought was cool. Oh, I thought the cool discussion was, and I've actually been doing this, is recording stuff in the Apple Vision Pro format, in the, what's it called?
Spatial video.
Like there's been moments where I've recorded stuff in spatial video thinking at some point, you know, I'm going to want this in spatial video. So that was an interesting discussion that you had. I think it was with Jaws about how, you know, like, you know, you got people that are already doing that, even though they're not necessarily, and why put it on the 15, you know, even though, you know, most people don't have that yet. And that's kind of an interesting concept, but that's something I found myself doing once I had the ability to do it.
I thought what was interesting too, is Jaws did not shy away from acknowledging that not many people have a Vision Pro. He at one point said, I don't know how many of your audience have bought one. When I said, you know, I even pointed out to him, like, you know, we know everyone doesn't have, like, there was no pushback, right? I mean, I think the thing is that with Apple, you have to read between the lines and kind of, honestly, I had to rewatch it to see kind of like, oh, what was the salient stuff that came out of it? So that was one thing where it told me, right, the way that they think about the Vision Pro is they know everyone is not, you know, they're not talking about it like everyone is going to have this. It's a cat's meal. They understand its place and its long tail and how they're approaching it. So I thought that was interesting. I did think it was interesting when, you know, I guess I never thought about it. And this is also Apple fashion, but when Jaws outright said, you know, we don't even look at other competitors. We just look at professional phones. That was interesting.
Professional cameras. Yeah.
Sorry. Professional cameras.
For sure.
And what was interesting about that point is that, you know, there have been times where people are like, oh, Samsung come out with the Space Galaxy Zoom, right? 100X, it's all, you know, digitally enhanced. You know, Apple could have done that by now if they really wanted to. It's a software thing. And they still have resisted from doing that. And in over time, it's become a little bit more of a gimmick. It is still cool in certain situations. I will absolutely say that. But, you know, 10X, obviously more usable. Apple's at 5X. But also, you know, Apple's 5X zoom is different than the actual 5X zoom. The actual, f-stop and the properties of the image quality is different, you know. So that there's an advantage, actually, to Apple's 5X zoom versus Samsung's 5X zoom. And so I thought that was interesting. And then another piece that stood out to me after the fact is that I didn't grill them as hard because I didn't think of it in the moment. But basically, when I talked to Anand about AI, he basically said our chips are ready for generative AI. The only thing, so I wish I said, are you saying that, you know, we're at the same time when you ask them affirmatives, they never answer you in an affirmative.
Right.
I've almost been trained like that. But I think the question that I would have wanted to ask, knowing that he wouldn't give me an answer, was, so are you telling me that the iPhones today are currently ready to handle generative AI on device and not up to the cloud? And maybe he would have said yes. But again, sometimes you're so used to app, when you ask direct questions like that, Apple doesn't say anything. But that's probably the one question I would have followed up just to get an affirmative. But in the way he said it, he's basically saying, our chips today can already handle generative AI. So now we'll just see what features they plug in. So I think those are the three biggest takeaways, other than the fact that I didn't get my question answered about lens flare. And
although I got the sense that, this kind of dovetails into that, their comment, his comment about AI generally, I think Apple's approach to AI is like, well, you know, obviously it's all machine learning is their nomenclature for it, right? But they also don't talk about it so directly compared to how other companies do it. It's so much more under the hood type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's going to do all this stuff. And his response to lens flare suggested that it's doing some lens flare, mm-hmm. you know, work mm-hmm. under the hood. Mm-hmm. Without telling you it's doing lens flare work under the hood, and we're always working on making it better with lens flare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
But their comment about professional cameras rang so true to me because I've got a Canon Mark 7 back there that I have not taken down. I don't know when the last time I pulled out my DSLR. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a kick-ass camera. but there's no reason. I mean, there's almost no reason for me to do that anymore, especially nowadays, because it's just my ability as a you know, non-professional user of a really stupid camera that I bought, you know, way more camera than I could ever do, is silly compared to what the iPhone will do on its own, you know, doing all of its you know, machine learning efforts when I take a picture, right? And so the fact that that's who they compete against, I think that very much rings true. It's kind of arrogant too. It's like, well, we're going to worry about Samsung, but I think it's true. That's the issue. Yeah. I think that's absolutely the way to look at it.
Exactly. The other thing that, even for me, after editing this video, after the fact, I'm going to tell you all, we had every phone that was used to shoot this was an iPhone 15 Pro Max. But never at any time did they like lock in a setting. So all the video you see was done was auto, right? It was the actual camera interpreting the image. We were well lit for sure. But even some of those shots where the side shots where you see like the background, which would typically be completely blown out or the subject darker, I had some people in the comments say like, oh, what ND filters did you use to diffuse that? I'm like, there were no filters. This was just, so to me, I mean, I expected it to look great, but it actually looked better than I thought it would, quite honestly.
You can see people inside the offices walking in the hallways in the background. And I was like, holy crap. It's like, it's a good camera.
I mean, and then even things like, there were the time, sometimes I felt like when I looked at the shot of the two, myself and a guest inside, it sometimes even looked green screen because the separation was so clean between us and the background. I was just like, holy crap. Even going in between shadows and light, you didn't see a moment where it all of a sudden got like super exposed or blown out. It just handled it. I was like, woo. So, you know, when you think of that as a tool and you watch what's happening, it was pretty impressive.
I think the thing to look for is, you know, the movie, it was just out last year, the sci-fi movie. No, it was a sci-fi movie that it was actually, it got nominated for like just special effects type stuff, but it'll come to me. It was about the, like in the future AI and
not the creator.
Is it the creator?
The creator is the future and it like takes over people. I don't know.
No, not that one. Anyway, I'll think about it in a second, but the big deal about that movie is that they used a Sony essentially DSLR to film the entire movie, and the discussions in sort of the Hollywood kind of circles is that it is going to fundamentally change the economics of some of these big movies, because they were able to do a lot. If you look at it, you'd think it was filmed using, you know, the these huge rigs and stuff, and they didn't use it. It is the creator. That's the movie. And what it'll be interesting is if in the near future you have an iPhone that can film a feature that people can't tell it was an iPhone that filmed the feature, right? Like that'll be an interesting guy. That's like, I think the next thing they have to do it. Cause right now they've just been able to do that with a Sony, DSLR. And that was a huge step. You know, there's been like indie films that are filmed with iPhones, but I'm saying like a blockbuster, you know, sci-fi movie that's going to be heavy and stuff. Once they do that, then you're just like, holy crap. Like, you know, that's crazy. You guys are all mic'd though, right? You guys are all mic'd.
Yeah. So some of the other production
aspects. The sound was amazing.
So I'm gonna give some people an inside scoop. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but it's something small. So we both had lavaliers. There was a mic also between the two of us sitting down. And then there were two mics up in the top of the ceiling pointing at us. So we had multiple sources. The mix that was given to me was flawless. That audio was incredible. Windy. You might not have been able to tell, but sometimes my eyes were like closing because the wind was making me teary.
There was no background. It was like you guys were in a studio. It was crazy. I was at some point when people were getting in and out, I was like looking for the thing. I saw it on you on one of them, but like some of these people were getting on and you're just like, what's the mic?
Yeah.
You know, you know.
I know you look at those areas on me, Gil. It's okay. But you know what? Here, you know the other thing about it. Not quick thing, but. Also, the video, some people are like, okay, so did they record it in log and did you color correct it? I didn't do anything. I took the file because I deliberately wanted to. Like, if we're going to do this and it's a proof of concept, I took it from the file and threw it on. And then the other thing is, none of these phones were on gimbals, meaning they were hooked onto the rails of the driving car. How little shake did you see?
So it was the iPhone stabilization that was
yes. Low. That's also another thing that stood out. No one's asking about it because I think they all figure, when I see the rig, they're stabilized. These were not on stabilizers. They were just clamped onto the bars of the actual car.
I mean, the Pro Max has its own kind of almost internal gimbal, though, right?
It does. But even at that, I mean, you're in a moving car with uneven ground. It looks like a locked in shot. I didn't apply any, what is it? The movement auto shake stuff. I didn't apply anything. I literally took the file exactly as it was, as if you and I were at a beach. Just let's take a little video clip and threw it in. That's what I wanted to do.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a cool little. I mean, you should almost do a video just on the.
I know.
I mean,
yeah,
just because clear it. But I mean, I think it'd be interesting to see. Like, just I think they'd like that because it'll just show. You know how advanced their capabilities are there because you're basically just taking direct source video and then mixing it with sound and the quality is crazy without much correction. I mean your post work was really easy for relatively speaking.
Did you say easy, Gil? I'm just kidding.
Knowing you were up late, but still.
Yes, I was. You're right. But no, it was as for a project at that level, it was as easy as it could be. And that's what I wanted to really experience. Like also the workflow of it all, right? How difficult was that? But it was pretty incredible. So, it was a cool opportunity. I hope there's more. I mean, I'm not saying that I would ever get the ability to be like, this is my franchise with Apple, but
right.
No. If I see them doing it on their own internal, I'm like, damn it. But hey, it's all right. It's their headquarters. But I think even when they, kind of give their marketing bullet points, some people asked me how scripted this was, right? And the reality is that I said the whole idea was like, let's talk about the iPhone, but these are some of the topics I want to hit. And they're like, you're going to have roughly this much time with these people. Okay, there you go. So, of course, the AI guy knew I was going to talk about AI, but I didn't give him my direct questions.
Well, no, but again, my point with about how smoothly, I mean, again, like, it's hire people, it's just the caliber of people they have working there and the ability to hire, top-notch talent. All of them can speak and convey the points that they want to convey in a very crisp, very salient way. That by itself is just an impressive talent for anybody. But I thought the way they did it, and also driving, you didn't have cuts or anything, right?
So no, that's what I wanted to feel. Literally, the only cuts that you'll see in here is once we settle in the car and then you see that wide shot of us rolling. That's the only time I put any type of quote unquote real edit in there. The rest of it is just switching the cameras nonstop. And I wanted people to feel, and hopefully, like, I'm glad you could tell, this is as organic as possible as it could be. It really was
And that's what that's what was impressive and why when we started the conversation, I was like, "Hey, I'm a freaking teleprompter." Because I mean, they were again talking about some high concept sometimes technical discussion, and there ain't a lot of stuttering. There ain't a lot of it's just being somebody that presents stuff. It's always impressive when you see people that, do that.
You know what? I guess I'm around it so much, right? Like the media training level that Apple execs and spokespeople have. Like now that you tell me, I'm thinking about it. Okay, remember Anand was rattling off about all the aspects of the processor like butter. Like there was no stutter. It was straight up like
that's smooth. That's what I'm saying.
And understandable, right? Like it was just
highly technical. Mm-hmm. Highly, kind of nerdy at some level, but then watered down to where people could understand it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just that's just kick-ass media training, you know, on top of a good, of a strong mind to begin with. But yeah, it was just that, but that was definitely one of the things that I did want to ask you, because I was like, did they all just talk off the top of their head like that? Because that's impressive.
What you saw is what you got, Gil.
That's literally awesome, man. No, that's awesome. It was cool. I'm glad they agreed to let you do it, and I'm glad you came up with it. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it was fun. I knew that at the very least, people would just want to look at the campus because that was cool.
It was cool.
At the very least.
At some point, there was a fire truck and an ambulance. And yes. I was like, what happened there?
There's also a really funny, there's a funny moment where like that got picked up. They call her anime girl. She's wearing like the short skirt and like the little sweater vest. And she's on a bike with the leg stockings, and she's biking behind the cart. And people got a huge kick out of that. You know, we did it on a Friday because there aren't as many people on campus, so we could at least navigate more, because, you know, when you're there, there's a lot of people on campus on a normal day. There really are.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, no, I was wondering when you did it, because like there was a place where you went through, there was a bunch of tables that were empty. I was looking at it like, oh, did they clear it? Did they do this? It was kind of interesting, but it was cool to see the campus. I mean, you definitely got you went all the way around, I assume.
There's
some trails.
Yeah. I'm not sure. We didn't call it out, but there's obviously the main campus. And then there's a thing where we kind of drove around it in a circle, which is the Steve Jobs Theater.
Right.
So what's fun about that is that I've never seen a golf cart go around it. So to me, you know, there's always like you're walking around it, you're standing around it. But I was like, oh, dang, we're going around it in a golf cart. And then I only imagine like how cool the shot would be, like, oh, here's Steve Jobs Theater. Here's us on the cart. Like, and so, you know, I mean, people that care about this stuff, you know, I'm actually geeking out at the same time. But I'm like, I got to focus on this interview, you know, like Jaws is going off, having fun. I'm like, I got to focus. But like, oh, my gosh, this is so cool to see.
You're like, I'm a reporter.
Darn it. Try my best.
I'm a professional.
but it was fun and cool. Okay. I'm going to end this with one quick news story that I wanted to bring up because it just came out. It's a quick one, but it's kind of funny. Okay. So there's recently, just I think in the last day or two, the AirTags firmware came out. But it technically wasn't supposed to, because it looks like whoever was the engineer or the person who was supposed to deploy this, they accidentally set the deployment instead of for what is it saying? Okay, instead of doing the month, the day, and then the year of 2024, they did the month and day of 24, which means they're deploying like 1,000 years ago. So now supposedly everyone's getting an AirTags firmware update merely because someone typed in 24 instead of 2024.
That's some old school Y2K problems right there.
We're human. we're human. That's a, no matter what, we're still human at the end of the day.
Yeah, there's one guy. It could be one guy that screws a whole lot of stuff up.
That's what I'm saying. So if you're getting your AirTag firmware, thank the engineer or whoever typed in 24 instead of 2024.
That's awesome. That's cool. That's a good story. I like it.
All right, G. Thank you so much for your insight. And, you know, I think that you definitely offered a lot more context than I could by myself. So I really appreciate it. And, you know, I know it's going to come up. It's just going to be in the background, flowing in the background now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're going to get hearings. The cool thing is you'll get the depots like you did with the Epic case. That'll start becoming public when they file them. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be, you'll get a lot of like the inside. You'll get the emails, right?
Once they get the production
of the emails. That'll be fun to see. It's always fun to see.
All right, Gil.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much, man. We'll talk soon, okay?
Yep. See ya.
All right, everybody. So, yes, a long show, but I think packed with a lot of juicy, beefy content. We will follow where this antitrust case against Apple goes. And like we said, this is going to be years and a long time, but look, the show's been long enough. Let's just wrap this up. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to all you who continue to support this show. We also cannot forget about the biggest part of the show, you, the contributors. So let's give some shout outs to all of our Patreon supporters at the Platinum Apple level. Brandon Ledford, Gil Cabrera, Wesley Frater, Jarrett Lewis, Michael Gigliotti, Atari Koenigsegg, and Gregory Ford. Thank you for all of your support and for everyone who continues to support my content and the Patreon at any level. Y'all are amazing, and we hit 301 episodes. How much further can we go independent? All right, we'll be back here. Same bat time, same bat channel. Take care, everybody. Be safe. It's the Apple Bits XL, baby. Peace.